It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 9. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, hope you're doing great. Happy Mother's Day. It's a tough one for me as I recently lost my mom, my inspiration and champion. She passed away this past March, but she will never leave my mind and spirit. I have so many great memories of time spent with mom and cherish all of them. I'm just so grateful that she was my mom. And will always be such a just a lovely, lovely, incredible woman. So my thoughts are with my mom, always. And here's hoping you will all celebrate your dear mom today and every day. Well, I have some great news to share. The station has decided to extend this show through the summer. So Talking Golf will continue to air all summer through July and August through Labor Day weekend. Sunday, September 5th. The past couple years, the show has been a 13-week show. But this season, Talking Golf will go throughout the summer. I'm excited. There's always so much to talk about. And, you know, golf season is just really getting started here in New York and throughout the Northeast. So we'll keep going every Sunday morning from 7 to 8. Very excited. Did you get out to play at all this week? I hope so. I visited Pound Ridge last Tuesday as part of a Met Golf Writers Association outing. Pound Ridge is the only Pete Dye designed golf course in the entire state of New York. How is that possible? You know, he's designed so many golf courses throughout the country. In fact, he redesigned the TPC River Highlands course in Cromwell, Connecticut, where they play the Travelers Championship. And looking forward to playing that course this week in the Travelers Championship Media Day. And we'll talk more about that next week. But Pound Ridge, just beautiful. Very lush. The condition of the golf course is amazing, given it's really just early May. It's a very, very difficult layout. Lots of obstacles, mounds, bunkering, water, slopes. The greens are very tricky, but fair. It's open to the public. It's about an hour's drive north of Manhattan, and it's owned by Ken Wang, the brother of fashion designer Vera Wang. And honestly, I've never seen so many cherry blossom trees on one piece of property in full bloom. It's just spectacular. Really, really great day. So this morning, the director of golf from Pound Ridge, Brad Worthington, will join us. He has enjoyed a long, impressive career here in the New York metropolitan area. He served as the president of the Met PGA from 2011 to 2013. He was named the 2016 Metropolitan PGA Professional of the Year. He has worked at Wingfoot in Westchester. Brad has worked at Atlantic Golf Club on the east end of Long Island, my neck of the woods. He's worked at Brooklawn in Fairfield, Connecticut, Trump Ferry Point. And he's been at Pound Ridge the last couple years. So he's seen a lot. He's worked with a lot of golfers. And this morning we'll learn more about Pound Ridge and Brad's perspective on golf here in the New York metropolitan area. And maybe we'll get a free lesson or two. That would be fun. And then at 7:40, Brandel Chambly will join us. Brandel, as many of you know, a longtime golf analyst for the Golf Channel, former tour player. Brando is known for not being afraid to express his opinion, which I think is so important, so audiences can really hear different perspectives, different points of view. I mean, we need more of that in golf broadcasting. I think lately too many commentators are afraid to say anything that, you know, may offend the players, may offend the tours. So consequently, more times than not, you know, they're making positive comments, which is great, but they don't voice contrary opinions. And I think it's important to hear various opinions on players and issues from commentators that are respected out there. So we'll talk to Brandel Chambly about that. And gosh, there's so much to talk about in the world of golf. Let's start with the Walker Cup being played this weekend at Seminole Golf Club in Juneau Beach, Florida. It's a biannual two-day amateur competition. And this is actually the very first time the Walker Cup is being played in the spring as opposed to its usual time in the fall to ensure good weather, good course conditions in May down in Florida as opposed to September. You can get, you know, wet conditions and, you know, potential hurricanes. I mean, it's hurricane season down there in September. But in a bizarre week at the Walker Cup, at least 15 players on the U.S. and Great Britain and Ireland team have gotten sick. And USGA officials said that the sickness is a gastrointestinal issue. It's not COVID-19. It's not food poisoning. But gosh, tough week for everybody down there. They're, you know, these players and both captains got this bug and they've been going to the hospital for IV treatments, and both teams have had to use their alternates for the first time in the Walker Cup's 99-year history because of this virus. And the only reason the alternates were there in the first place was because of COVID-19 precautions. Tyler Strafficy, the reigning U.S. amateur champ, he had to withdraw from his singles match yesterday just minutes before his tee time. He got sick on the range, so an alternate had to come in last minute to fill in for him and actually won his singles match in the afternoon. U.S. captain Nathaniel Crosby Jr., he had to be hospitalized this week as well. And he said yesterday, it's just amazing we're playing at all. So Team USA goes into today's matches. They're up 7-5 against Great Britain and Ireland. And so you have the four foursome matches this morning and then the singles matches in the afternoon. And the U.S. team coming in basically as defending champions, they need 6 more points, 13 points overall to retain the Walker Cup. And Great Britain, Ireland, they need to get to 13.5 points to win. So yesterday morning, all four matches went the full 18 holes, which is exciting. And in the morning, the Americans won 2 matches, and Great Britain and Ireland rallied to win 2 matches. Cole Hamrie drained a 35-footer for birdie on the 18th hole to lift him and his partner, Davis Thompson, to a 1-up victory over Alex Fitzpatrick and Barclay Brown after Hammer and Thompson had led by 3 with 5 holes left. American alternate Mac Meisner came in for John Pach because Pach got sick. He got the stomach bug. And Meisner, he teamed up with Ricky Castillo, and they beat Jack Dyer and Marty Lamb 2-up. And then Cole Hamrie won again in the afternoon, and so did Ricky Castillo. So those two won both matches. So it's exciting. It's very exciting to watch. And, you know, Nathaniel Crosby was the 81 U.S. amateur champion. And, yes, he's the son of the late Bing Crosby. And he guided that last Walker Cup team in 2019 to victory. And they had to rally from a 7-5 deficit on Saturday to win in 2019. Nathaniel also played on the winning USA team in 83. And I had the pleasure of playing golf with Nathaniel Crosby and his brother Harry at the tournament. It was called the Crosby. It was a charity golf tournament that their mother, Catherine, organized. And it went on for many, many, many years in North Carolina. And I was so thrilled to get a celebrity invitation. It was such a great tournament. Thousands of people came out to watch. And I have great memories of Catherine Crosby dressed in all white. You know, she has very fair skin, so she was protecting herself from the sun. But she would be driving the VIPs around in a golf cart. And she put me in this match with her 2 sons. And so they were watching us the whole time. Talk about being nervous. And Nathaniel, you know, he's a great player. He's ultra competitive, loves to win, and makes a great captain. So we had a good time. So I'm going to see if Nathaniel will be able to come on the show next Sunday to talk about the Walker Cup and what he's been up to. He's a member at Seminole, so that obviously helps. And remember when the Walker Cup was played at National? in Southampton. That was back in 2013. Loved it. Really enjoyed walking around and watching that. And Team USA beat Great Britain and Ireland 17-9 in that one. So that was a great Walker Cup. All right, at the Wells Fargo in Charlotte, Keith Mitchell has a two-shot lead. He carded a bogey-free 5-under 66, moved him to 9-under. And guess who will join Mitchell in that final pairing? None other than Rory McIlroy. Yes, Rory, looking good. He sunk four birdies on the front yesterday, grabbed the lead briefly before a double bogey on the 12th. And then he followed that up with a birdie on the 15th. He shot a 3-under 68, and he finds himself in the final pairing for the first time since the 2020 Genesis Invitational. On Friday, he looked really impressive. He shot a 5-under 66. So, you know, Rory has not won since 2019. His ranking has dropped to 15th in the world. And he'll start the day two shots back, tied for second place with Gary Woodland. Luke List is three shots back. So Rory, you know, after he missed the cut at the Masters, he took 3 weeks off. And, you know, it looks little by little like his game is taking shape. We've seen great iron play from him this week. We've seen solid putting. And, you know, it's interesting. His drives now are fading, not drawing. So we'll ask Randall Chambly about that later in the show. Hey, and it was great to see Phil Mickelson play so well in the first round. He shot a 7-under 64. Yesterday, he shot a +5. So Phil is 2 over and not able to sustain, you know, this brilliant play. Anyway, remember the Premier Golf League we spoke about last week? Well, according to a report this past Tuesday in the Telegraph in the UK, the league, which is going after professionals on the PGA Tour with huge money offers, they're proposing that they would feature 40 to 48 players with a schedule that features 18 tournaments around the world. And they reportedly are offering guaranteed money and ownership stakes to 10 to 12 players who would then captain four-man teams. And they've been approaching representatives for players like Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose. And they're offering between $30 and $40 million guaranteed for the players to leave the PGA Tour and join this new league. And there are reports that Phil Mickelson has been offered $100 million to join this new league. Unbelievable money. The money is apparently coming from Saudi Arabia, and they're hoping to be in operation next year. And that these guys are basing themselves in Jupiter, Florida, where a lot of these pros live, to connect with players and agents who live there. Well, Rory has spoken out about it. JT has spoken out about it. News about the Premier Golf League was mentioned at the PGA Tour meeting earlier in the week, and Commissioner Jay Monahan reportedly said, you know, had some strong words to say. The PGA Tour and European Tour, they have joined together in a strategic alliance. This happened last November. But, you know, they're united in their position on the league, and they have said that any players who sign with this new league would lose their PGA Tour membership. So it's either PGA Tour or nothing. So just interesting that, you know, this league, you know, is going after these top guys. They're not giving up. I mean, I can't see it happening with the top players from the PGA Tour. These top players would have to take a huge leap of faith to jump. And if the stars don't go to this Premier Golf League, then it would be very difficult for them to gain any kind of traction. The money is enticing, for sure. And Phil Mickelson certainly did not criticize the new league. He basically said that the fans would love it because they would get to see the best players more often. So he didn't, you know, he kind of left it open. He didn't say he wouldn't do it. But, you know, I can't see him jumping over. Both Augusta National and the USGA issued statements. The Augusta National wrote that the PGA Tour and European Tour have each served the global game of golf with honor and distinction. And as it has for many decades, the Masters Tournament proudly supports both organizations in their pursuit to promote the game and world's best players. And then the USGA issued a statement as well. So surely these organizations are supporting the PGA Tour. But you have to really wonder what's happening with this other league. They certainly have caused more than a stir in the golf world. So we can talk to Brando about that as well. All right, we are going to take a quick break. Coming up, Brad Roylington, the director of golf at Pound Ridge Golf Club, is going to join us. We'll talk a little New York golf with Brad, a little Pete Dye, grab a few lessons from Brad, and have some fun. So, but first, let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region. Thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the player, the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Hey, hey, hey. Good morning to you. Looks like a gorgeous day out there so far. At least down here on Long Island. And joining me now, Brad Worthington, Director of Golf, Pound Ridge. Brad, welcome to Talkin' Golf.
Ann, good to hear your voice. How are you today?
I'm doing good, hanging in on this Mother's Day. But so what a career you've had. I mean, very impressive in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. You served as the president of the Met PGA from 2011 to 2013. You were named the 2016 Metropolitan PGA Professional of the Year. You've worked at Wingfoot, Atlantic, Brooklawn, Trump Ferry Point, and the last couple of years at Pound Ridge. And I had a great time up there this past week. Thanks for hosting us.
Well, it's always good to see you up there. You love the course, right?
Oh, man. It was, yeah, so lush. And it's in great shape considering it's only, what, really early May, right?
Yeah, we're getting ready for the MGA Public Links tournament in June. So our superintendent is doing a great job. And, yeah, we're excited to have that event up there. And that's kind of why you're up there with the MGA golf riders. So, yeah, it's really in good shape.
I can't believe it's the only Pete Dye designed course in New York. I mean, he's designed so many courses around the country, but.
Yeah, and, you know, his legacy will be that. You know, when the Wangs chose to hire him as their architect, you know, you're in the middle of such great facilities, as you know, such great golf courses. Getting somebody who's, you know, a little different. You know, his courses are very challenging, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and what did they say? It's the seventh toughest course you can play in the country?
Yeah, Golf Advisor named us that last year. You know, uh-huh. And you know that, but I also love the golf course because it's fair from the more forward tees, too. So you can stretch it way back. It's really difficult. We don't recommend anyone other than maybe a 3 handicap or so trying it from back there because it is so difficult. But you move up and there's some pretty generous landing areas. It doesn't look like that from the tee, but when you get out there, you know, you said when you played, you drove the ball really well, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't get into too much trouble off the tee. I just think, you know, there are a lot of obstacles out there. And I just think, you know, the green complexes were tough, just getting used to the speed. But there are a lot of obstacles out there. And so I know we had a very good player on our team, John Paul. I think he's like a 3 handicap. And a lot of his tee shots were finding the mounds on the sides of the fairway. So if you're not perfectly straight.
Yeah, yes. If you hit it offline, you're in trouble. So you have to be able to maneuver those mounds and somehow get it on the green. That's funny.
So you've worked with, gosh, everybody from Venus Williams to Todd English to Donald Trump. I mean, you've worked with a lot of people. They've all come to find you some, you know, at your various clubs through the years.
Yeah, different things. You know, it's always fun to to teach people who are successful at other things. Venus Williams was down in Doral. That was about 20 years ago now. And, you know, she had never really held a golf club. She was obviously an incredible tennis player. But usually when somebody's athletic like that, they can take up golf and learn it pretty quickly.
I would love to see her play some golf, but, you know, she's pretty busy with still a tennis career. But could she hit the ball? Did she have good form?
She did. She used the same kind of tones when she was hitting a tennis ball. So she was kind of laughing at herself because she was like grunting.
Oh, get out of here. Day. That's so funny.
That's kind of, you know, people have habits. And she was laughing about it. She was laughing at herself, actually. But she had a good form.
And what was it like working with the Donald when you were at Ferry Point?
Well, you know, he has done so much for the high end of golf. I mean, he owns, I think, 17 properties. I think three of them are international. He's done a lot for the game of golf, you have to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've known him since the boxing days. You know, he used to have a lot of press conferences at the Plaza, and then obviously he owned the casinos in Atlantic City, and he used to show up at all these press conferences. And then obviously in the golf, I golfed with him when his club in West Palm Beach, Florida, first opened up. And, you know, he'd clear everybody out. He would clear everybody out in front of him so that he wouldn't have to wait at all. I mean, he likes to play fast. Right?
He does like to play fast, yeah.
And he's been playing for a long time.
He's a pretty good player. You know, I a lot of people ask that question, and I worked with him at first when I was an assistant pro at Wingfoot, and, you know, we played some golf, and he could get it around there pretty good. I mean, he hits it pretty far and pretty good putter. So, yeah, he can definitely play.
I'll never forget when we were at some kind of opening at Ferry Point, and you were there at that point, and he leaned over to me and he said, "Ann, I am going to announce tomorrow that I am running for the presidency of the United States." And I just looked at him. What am I supposed to say? Okay. I don't remember that. Jack and Barbara Nicholas were there, and that must have been the official opening of the golf course, right?
That was it, and we were busy prepping for that. Michael Breed was our host, and he, Jack Nicklaus, and who spoke eloquently, and President Trump, who, you know, but we had no idea. I mean, we'd heard a couple little rumors, but you're right. That was the very next day was the day he announced.
Unbelievable. He orchestrated this photo, and it was just, you know, you can't write this stuff. Anyway, so you have worked at both public courses and private facilities. Pound Ridge is public. It looks like, you know, it's so well maintained. It could be a private course, but what talk about the difference between working at private facilities versus public golf courses.
Well, you know, I've been fortunate to work at so many nice ones, and you know, private clubs, some people might find them a little stuffy. You know, you have a membership, it's run by a board. Some of the public facilities I've worked at, you know, you have a single owner, so it's a unified direction. And so they, you know, sometimes you'll have a golf course where there's one golf chairman and they'll plant a tree, and the next one will take it out, the next one will put it back in. You know, so, but there's a little more continuity, I would say, at a public facility, especially a single owner. And so the Wang family has, you know, their father CeCe and Ken were the ones that found the property and ended up hiring Pete Dye and building the golf course. And now Darren is running for us. You know, they have a very consistent message, and so it is in good shape. And spend a lot of time, you know, making sure the golf course is good for our customers, which, you know, it's important that, as you know, the greens are such an important aspect of a golf course, right? You, as part of the experience. And so you mentioned there's a lot of undulations, and they're challenging, but they're very smooth, which really, you know, helps our customers come out and play a lot.
Well, I have to pick your brain, Brad, because you are a well-known instructor, very respected instructor. So how does one become a better putter? You know, if you're on the green in regulation, which hopefully you are, the key is getting that first putt close to the hole so you don't have to struggle to make par. So it's all about distance control, right? How do you get that first putt if, you know, close to the hole, basically?
A lot of people, when they putt, you'll hear them say it's a ball and a half outside the hole. And what does that mean? To me, that really is what speed am I going to hit it at to get it to break that much? Because if it's breaking a ball and a half, it could break three balls if you hit it softer. So I like to do people a lot of training. And what I'll do is I'll stick a tee behind the hole, and I'll have people take five or six balls. And from 15 feet, I want them to hit it past the front of the cup but not past the tee. And if you can get consistent, and it's just a question of how you continue to train yourself, because when you go to different courses, the green is a different team. So I challenge people to do that. And over a period of time, if you can get good at the distance control, there's a couple other tools like that. I use a thing called the putting arc, which is a piece of yellow plastic or gray plastic that you drag your putter on, because hitting it in the center of the putter face is so important. You know, if you're hitting it on the toe or the heel, the club twists and whatever. So getting really good, consistent contact helps that speed. And then acceleration pattern. A lot of people are told, you know, take it back and follow through. So they over-accelerate, and they're not really good at distance when you are changing your acceleration paces. So it's a process. It takes time. But, you know, if you can become a good putter, you know you can play a lot better. Right.
It's all about making it's all that's what it's all about. It's all about making the putts, really. How does a 13 handicap, Brad, how does a 13 handicap improve to become a single digit?
Well, I would get you on that putting green first, because I'm wondering how many putts you average, and you can track that. And
sure.
Now let's say you're averaging 35 putts. You know, I think we can get you under 30, so that's five putts around, and well, now you're an eight. So I would invite you up to Pound Ridge anytime to take a putting.
Sounds easy.
In the Pound Ridge area.
It's all about making those putts. Brad, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on. I'd like to visit again soon, and have a great golf season, okay?
And good catching up. Happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Brad Worthington, Director of Golf, Pound Ridge. All right, coming up, Brandel Chambly, studio analyst for the Golf Channel, Golf Central, for the Golf Channel live show that they do from coverage of major championships, all that coming up. So stay where you are. At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And let's get right to our next guest, Brandel Chambly, golf analyst for the Golf Channel, Golf Central, Golf Channel's live from coverage of major championships, former tour player. Brandel, welcome to Talking Golf. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Ann. Nice to join you. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing this this Sunday? Mother's Day, by the way.
So
Mother's Day to you and to all those in your family.
Thank you so much. I'm a mother to a 14-year-old golden retriever who is laying right here at my feet.
Hey, that counts.
That does count, for sure. They need a lot of mothering. But so how things are going? I know there have been a lot of changes at the Golf Channel. Do you like doing the studio work in Connecticut as opposed to Orlando? And maybe talk about some of the other changes with the channel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously huge changes. After 25 years and change, the Golf Channel's vacated their studios down in Orlando and moved up to Stamford, Connecticut. And, you know, quite a number of people chose to come up, but a number of people didn't. So, yeah, I mean, there's I guess a growing pains a little bit, I guess, sort of fitting in up here and trying to find your way around. The new studio is gorgeous. I mean, the world of sports have seen it before. It's much, much bigger than the studio we were using down in Orlando. And it's full of, people who are running here and there and who are talented and been doing other sports, but they're diving into golf. And, the pulse of golf never stops. Other sports, you've got downtime and then you crank it back up, but golf is around the clock. So I think they probably look at us golfers running through the office and then they're like, God, do you guys ever stop? And it's like, well, there's no downtime. Every week it seems like it's a major, and there's not just one golf tournament, there's 3, 4, 5 big golf tournaments everywhere every week. So I think we're all enjoying it up here. I've found new restaurants. I've settled in here at Stanford. When I fly up from Arizona, get over to New York City a little bit. I had my kids in this week and they were looking at colleges, so looks like one of them's going to move up here anyway, so I'll be up here for her and for work.
Well, welcome to our neck of the woods, to the New York metropolitan area in Connecticut. That's awesome.
Let's
talk about style of golf commentators. I've always admired your honesty on the air, but do you find that more and more golf commentators are perhaps becoming too vanilla, holding back their opinions on the air?
Well, I think it's always kind of been that way, really. There's different styles. If you're out in the field and you're calling live golf, which is something I don't do very often, but if you're calling live golf, obviously you're out on the range and you get to know the players, you get to know their coaches, you hear their opinions, and obviously they sort of come out on the air. It's the rare commentator that has the ability to offer insight, sometimes critical insight, that sort of runs against the grain. Johnny Miller was the exception for the most part. You can go back to the earliest days of golf on television to Byron Nelson, Dave Marr, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Curtis Strange, Ken Venturi. Ken Venturi sometimes was critical on TV a little bit. I think he struck a nice balance. But Johnny was the king. He was the very best there was. But I think Paul Azinger does a fabulous job, and he'll absolutely be critical sometimes. But for the most part, golf has been a very genteel world. And, superlatives, they get overused. And the reason I think you should use superlatives sparingly is because when something really and truly great comes along, if you have lavished every shot, every player, every event, every course with superlatives, they're diminished, such that when you actually do need to say something is great or extraordinary, it is no different than everything else that you've called great or extraordinary. And it's diminished. I think for the most part, superlatives are the fat, and you need to cut the fat and wait until it's appropriate. But in studio shows, it is my job. I always say it's my job to tell the truth. Sometimes it's hard to find the truth, but it's my job, and you want to be fair and accurate, and that's what I try to do.
Well, it just seems like there's like this fear out there of angering the tours, that people are too, you're afraid to anger the players and to say anything negative. And, I'd love to hear more opinion from respected commentators. I just think that's there's an important place for opinion with television golf. So we'd like to see more of it.
Yeah, but in live golf, the cadence of live golf is so fast. You're going from shot to shot to shot to shot to shot. And you're basically, you're talking about the yardage and the club and the situation. And there's just not a lot of time to give opinion in live golf. It just moves far too fast. Until Sunday, and it gets more down to 2, 3, 4 players, and the cadence slows down a little bit. But I certainly understand what you're saying, and You know, it's just not easy when you become friends with people that you're covering to sort of speak critically about them. It's a difficult thing to do.
Sure, it really is, because you have to get to, you know, close to these guys to really understand the sport and to be knowledgeable and to express, you know, the news, and then to turn around. It's hard to criticize people that you know and like, obviously. And they're all very,
yeah.
Most of them are very likable, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But I've always said, you know, I think that, you know, you have to be able to speak critically of people you like and complimentary of people that maybe you don't particularly care for. You know, but I strive to be, you know, indifferent towards the players. I certainly, you know, I respect their talents and their golf swings and the way they go about things and what many of them do off of the golf course. But I try. It's not always easy, but I try to be, you know, as unbiased and fair as I can be. But it's a difficult thing to do.
It really is. Well, let's move to this Premier Golf League, which is, you know, has been back in the news in a big way this past week. The league is reportedly offering top players tons of money to jump ship, so to speak. What are your thoughts about the Premier Golf League?
Well, it's already splintered into two tours, because there is, you know, the Premier Golf League, which, you know, raised its head a little more than a year ago. And now there's the Super Golf League. And the Premier Golf League originally had money coming from Saudi Arabia. Now the Premier Golf League says the money's coming from American and sort of European investors. And the Saudi Arabia investors have moved and started the Super Golf League. And that's 10, 12 tournaments. The Premier Golf League's 18 tournaments. Both of them are trying to usurp the biggest players in the world and sort of buy immediate prestige. You know, it's taken 124 years for the PGA Tour to establish prestige and records. And that's, you know, along with the money that players play for, they're playing for their legacy, their place in the history of the game. And, you know, it raises very, I think, tough philosophical questions. Do you value prestige and your place in the game more than enormous money? It's not that, I mean, they're already making enormous money, so it's almost 2-3, it could be 4 times the money they're making that are being thrown at them. But for this to take place, you know, a domino has to fall, which is to say a player has to commit, and then, you know, hopefully that gives them the momentum. I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. That it'll give them the momentum that other players will commit. But if they do, they run the risk of, well, immediate suspension from the PGA Tour and possibly expulsion forever from the PGA Tour. You know, it's something that the PGA Tour has vetted with their lawyers, and they think they have the ability to do that. It could set up, who knows, it could set up court cases if that were to happen. But, you know, I'm sure that's what they're banking on, the Super Golf League and the Premier Golf League, that one player will commit, and then another, and the dominoes will fall. It raises, you know, very tough questions. And, you know, I mean, there's managers involved. You know, you think, well, no, it couldn't happen. But the fact that players go over and play in Saudi Arabia is testament to the fact that they can be bought. You know, when you watch, and maybe you remember this, but remember when Greg Norman was playing at Hilton Head,
sure,
and Jamie Hutton, the leukemia patient, was following him around? And it was a marvelous story. And when Gary Woodland and Amy Bakkerstadt were having so much fun at the 16th hole at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, you know, of course, you know, Amy's, you know, a college golfer with Down syndrome. And, you know, those stories, and they're plentiful in the world of golf, they make you all warm and fuzzy over, because you see the professional golfers are using their talents to motivate and inspire and do wonderfully charitable acts. And that is what the PGA Tour has been as much about as providing entertainment. And along comes, you know, these entities, as golf becomes more global, where it doesn't make you warm and fuzzy. You know, it makes you feel, you know, sort of gross when you think about,
right,
what they're being asked to do, to go over and play in Saudi Arabia. Whether the players know it or not, they are They are, in effect, laundering the reputation of the most reprehensible regimes in the world. They don't know it, but they're essentially paid ventriloquist dummies who are spitting out the words of the reprehensible people who are trying to pretend like they can get along in the world. And meanwhile, Sharia law pervades in that country. And that's where some of this money's coming from. And it's the most reprehensible people, regime in the world. And, it's hard to imagine that players would go and dirty their reputations by participating in events where the money comes from those sorts of places. But we've seen it already. I mean, players have gone over and played in Saudi Arabia. And I just don't think they're aware of what they're doing.
I agree. It's, as Rory called it, it would be a money grab. And I just can't see these entities working at all because they need a lot of these star players to jump ship. And that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Rory, Rory is, he is a shining light in a world of, very articulate and clever golfers. He stands out, because he has a great sense of right and wrong. And it's not just always about money. Even Brooks Koepka said, he didn't phrase it quite the way Rory did. Rory said, I'm not particularly happy with where the money's coming from. That's Rory being diplomatic and saying he didn't like where the money's coming from. But Brooks said that it'd be hard for him to look players in the face whose job he was taking away. And in essence, imagine, there's a law called Price's Law, and it's an interesting dynamic, but it's certainly applicable to the corporate world, which basically says that within any group of employees, it's roughly the square root of the number of people working there who do 50% of the work. So if you have 100 employees at a business, Price's Law says that 10 of them are doing 50% of the work. Those 10 are the most easily recruited away employees. They're the ones with the most options. They're the smartest, the most high energy, conscientious employees you have. And if a company, and there's lots of ways companies can go bankrupt and out of business, but one of them is to lose key employees. And it's a very real dynamic in the world of in the corporate world, such that, it's very often when private interests are buying a corporation, they'll get key employee insurance. That dynamic is what's being threatened on the PGA Tour. Imagine the PGA Tour without the most popular, the most entertaining. Yes, winning goes with it, but also so does the fame, this sort of Kardashian element that goes along with winning. Imagine if they lost all of the people that moved the needle and left. Of course, that's why, Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour, are taking this very seriously. They know what's at stake. And I think they've taken all the right and necessary moves, not just to protect their interests, but also to protect the world of professional golf and the reputation that the golf world has, which is, besides providing great entertainment, very philanthropic in its background.
Absolutely. And, what about this $40 million bonus pool that they want to split among 10 players who perform the best in social media, who move the needle? What do you think about that program?
I think it's appropriate. I think it's what needs to be done. Again, there is, what these leagues, these super leagues, are doing is shining a spotlight on sort of an untapped or, I'd say, underappreciated part of winning. At least, they are directly compensated, players are, for their skills.
Can you give us an extra minute?
For the entertainment that they provide for us. But there is this sort of Kardashian element of fame that the super leagues are trying to tap into. Like, we want to buy your fame. And that player incentive program is sort of getting at that issue. And it is a very small investment to protect the overall health of professional golf.
Brando Chamblee, my guest. We never have enough time, but
no
what
problem.
What do you think has been the best story of the season out there so far? You have Jordan winning again, Stuart Sink at 47 winning twice this season, huge win for Japan with Hideki Matsuyama, Lydia Ko getting back into the winner's circle. What has been, the best story in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've tapped into it. I mean, I certainly have enjoyed Jordan Spieth clawing his way back into, the upper echelon of golf, but also Liddy Ko. You know, these are, and the reason these stories are so compelling is they handled the downturn in their games, both of them, with such grace. They were constantly asked about what's wrong. Why are you playing poorly? You know, the camera never left them, so it showed their bad shots. It showed their disappointments, but yet they always handled the questions with grace. So it's, I think the whole golf world sort of puts their arms around these two players and like, come on back, and great to see you back.
And last question, and if you can answer this quickly, what do you want your legacy to be, Brando, when you look back on your career in life?
I guess somebody who was very passionate and loved the game of golf and followed it with great respect and admiration for the players they were covering, but also the game of golf. I'm a big fan of the history and the traditions of the game of golf, and I try to act accordingly in the game.
It's always a treat to talk with you. I need to allow for much more time. Have a wonderful day, and
thank
hopefully
you, so
you can get out and hit a few balls. It looks like it's going to be a nice day.
I'll be in the studio covering all the golf today.
I know, especially during the weekend. Well, listen, have a wonderful day, and my best to you and your family.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Right back.
Thanks so much. Brando Chambly.